You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second and final hour of the show. It is a Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are, of course, powered by SID Media. It is a Thursday, and as you know, every single Thursday, especially around this time, we do this thing called Shape Shift. But before I go anywhere, I hope that you've loved and enjoyed that song that we played for you. And I'd like to hear from you. Engage with us. If you don't know the number by now, where have you been? I judge you. Yeah, judge you straight. It is +27734703520. That's, of course, a number that you can use to let us know. And if you do have any questions as well, +27734703520. As I said, it is Shapeshifter Thursday. And my guest this evening, before I actually introduce my guest, let me tell you a little bit about my guest. It is Tendekai Mahlanza, a researcher whose interests include genetic improvements of economically important crops. Which reminds me, by the way, that on Tuesday we had that conversation about such things in the agricultural sector. It's amazing how these things almost talk to each other, eh? Love it for myself. So that is his interest, including the use of transcriptomics. Okay, that's a big word. I want him to explain that to us, to study plant-virus interactions and a whole lot more. Joins us then to talk about his life and his career journey, including, of course, a very important thing, which we really like on this show, which is personal finance and how he manages his money. And I believe that he's joining us on the line. Mr. Mahlanza, good evening and welcome to Business Sense this evening. How are you?
Good evening, Tapelo. I'm doing well, thanks. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for asking. I appreciate it. And the year is what? We are in July or thereabouts, just a few months before the end of the year. Are you cruising through the year?
I'm surprised we're already in July.
It's
flying by. I'm sure everyone is surprised.
No, I am as well. It is flying. Because the other day I was like, ha. When did we get into the second half of the year? And, you know, the scary part is that when you look at the things that we wanted to achieve, you know, the so-called resolutions and all that, and then you wake up, it's July. It's almost the end of July for that matter. And you're like, kanti kwenzakalani in this world, you know? I find that it's a tough one.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely a tough one. But thank you so much, sir.
Hello, Tapelo.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. You broke it a little bit, but I can hear you.
Ah, fantastic. Well, saying that, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Really, really appreciate your time. As mentioned, we've got this segment which we call Shapeshifters, and we do this every Thursday where we speak to people like yourselves who are leaders in their own fields, in industry, academia, whatever the case might be. And so we thought, let's have this conversation with you. But the biggest one is that we want to just encourage young people as well. Perhaps some are looking up to you. Maybe you've met or haven't met or whatever the case might be. But there are people who are looking up to you and thinking to themselves, well, if Mr. Mahlanza did it, then I can, you know, did it as well, or I can be able to achieve that. And so that's why we bring people like yourselves to this particular segment and really, really want to say thank you so much for your time. Before we even speak about your research interests and what you've done in your career and all that, can you take us a little bit back? Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where were you born? What was the environment like?
Thanks, Tapelo. I think, first off, thanks for inviting me to have this discussion.
Thanks for coming, yeah.
So, yeah, so I was born in Harare, Zimbabwe.
Okay.
Somewhere in the mid-80s.
Yeah, okay.
Ages, kind of catching up with me.
Yeah,
you know, simple upbringing. You know, back in the days when we used our toys were wire cars. You used to make your own toys.
I remember.
We did not have Toys R Us. You know, Toys R Us was in the backyard. You know, you'd catch birds and make your own wired cars and make your own ball. You know, your own plastic ball and you know that kind of thing. Life was simple then. You know, holidays, play with your friends, come back home, you know, from the dusty streets with, you know, dust all the way up to your
I
waist.
Remember,
And I must say, a very enjoyable, you know, upbringing back then.
Yeah. Oh, lovely. I remember exactly what you're talking about, and I can relate to it, which, again, like you said, kind of reveals our age, right? So we'll just take that one a little bit back as well. But, yeah, we didn't have those Toys R Us and all those sort of fancy stuff that, you know, our young people and children have these nowadays. Okay, Harare. So what was the setting like in Harare in your younger years, if you can remember, during the time, like you said, when you used to go out and get dusty and all that? What were some of the socio-economic challenges that you can remember?
Well, Tapelo, you know, growing up in a high density suburb, you're not necessarily on, if I can put it, the top of the food chain, if I may call it like that. But, you know, the young people were always, you know, pressured to try and get things that they didn't have. There's a lot of peer pressure. You know, young people see what other kids who are perhaps more well off, you know. And so, you know, kids always wanted to find ways of getting, you know, stuff. Those days, we didn't have PlayStations or TV games. You know? You know, and you always wanted that nice shoe, but your parents could not afford it, you know. And there was a lot of stuff like, can you please borrow me your shoes? I'm going for this function. I'm going for that function, you know.
Yeah.
There was a lot of peer pressure, you know, in terms of how you looked, how people perceived. You know, kids were really not content with what they had. And you know, at that age, there's a lot of peer pressure, you know. Fortunately, you know, like, unlike today, where, you know, there wasn't really a drug problem.
Okay. Okay.
Of the neighborhood. But fortunately, we didn't have those kind of negative, to that extent, kind of challenges. But the peer pressure, like any kid, to want in, to want to be seen by friends, you know. I think those are the challenges that kids faced.
Sure, that's interesting. And would you say you also faced the same thing, as in you felt the peer pressure as well? If you did, how were you dealing with that? Was it maybe parents that kept you grounded to say, look, appreciate what you have and also appreciate what you don't have? How did you personally navigate those challenges?
You know, definitely, you know, I was a pretty small kid, right? Very timid, and, you know, really did not assert myself. So definitely with that, in that setting as well, the peer pressure definitely gets to you. You want to belong and fit in, you know. But the upbringing in a Christian, you know, home, you know, and the lessons that you get, I think I progressed and to snap out of that much faster than my children. I tended to be comfortable in my own skin much earlier than my peers did, and I attribute that to the Christian upbringing that we had. And if I observe, if I remember back, that other kids did not necessarily have that strong Christian upbringing. So, I would attribute that, you know, to how my parents, you know, to assert Christian values.
Love it. You're saying snap out of it quickly. Just on that, with the benefit, I suppose, I don't know why politicians like the benefit of hindsight, but with the benefit of hindsight, as you look back and you see particularly that bit about your parents being able to shape you, you know, help you snap out of that, we are poor, we don't have this and that. How has that shaped you to the man that you are today in 2024?
Yeah, Tapelo, I mean, one has to, like I said, appreciate what one has, you know, in that setting.
Yeah.
When you saw your parents working, you know, to take you to that good school, you know, in that time, despite the circumstances that we're in. And being relatively, you know, better off than others, and you see those sacrifices, you know, it really makes an impression on you. To work harder and you know, make those sacrifices not of in vain. You know, and to really get ahead in life and reward those efforts. And even when one becomes a parent themselves, to themselves, you know, you remember those days and you look to make those sacrifices as well. So yeah, you definitely looking back, those sacrifices and upbringing, your parents made, and the way they did things, how they brought you up, they mold you in terms of how, even in a professional setting, you know, to work hard and really reward those efforts.
Okay, that's really lovely. Now let's talk about primary school. What was that like?
Well, I was quite fortunate, Tapelo, that despite, you know, growing up, you know, in a high density suburb, I went to a primary school in the suburb. You know, so it was quite nice.
Okay.
It was quite nice. I really enjoyed my primary school days. You know, it was quite diverse. You know, growing up in Zimbabwe, generally you do not really encounter as diverse, racially diverse, you know, generally. But in that school setting, you know, one grid, you know, you interact with people from different backgrounds, racial backgrounds, economical backgrounds as well. So it was nice being brought up, being schooled in that setting. It was a very good foundation. I quickly assessed myself on the, you know, on a variety of sporting disciplines, if I may say that, so myself. You know, so I was quite the soccer. You know, as early as grade three, you know, being in the school team, later on being in the cricket team, you know, on being in tennis and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I must say I really enjoyed my primary school days and also made some good friends then.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. And then you moved into high school, or what we call, you know, high school this side. What was that like? Did you have like your counseling, career counseling classes that would have shaped you into the kind of career that you then, you know, pursued? Or perhaps maybe life was different then and you had something different that you wanted to do?
No, we actually did not have, so I went to a boarding school.
Yeah.
It was actually a Methodist boarding school. I was born and raised Methodist as a boarding school. And we did not have any kind of career guidance as far as I remember. But I suppose my career choice was, you know, by the way, what I'm doing now is always what I envisaged doing.
Really?
I think I was just honest with myself about what I enjoyed and what I was good at. So I was very good at biology, and I enjoyed it. It came naturally to me. So in my case, you know, it was almost a natural career progression that is what I was going to study at university, and but there wasn't really career guidance as far as I remember in our high school.
That's interesting, because this is why I'm asking. You know how in our families, right, particularly the black family, you find that it's more your lawyer, your doctor, you know, or an accountant, your more conventional careers that our parents would drive us into, you know. We who are in the media, like, what exactly is, you know, radio presenting? Are you going to make money out of this? Because it's kind of careers that are not seen to be careers in, you know, in inverted commas. And just to think about someone who's doing biology and all these other things sounds like, okay, my child is going a direction that I didn't think they would go into. And that's why I was asking that question, to say plant virology and, you know, biology, it sounds like it's one of those unconventional careers. So as you made the decision, I suppose, just before university, I assume, and you can correct me, I assume you would have had to have conversations with your parents. What were those like as you told them, I like biology, I excel at it, this is the route that I want to go? Precisely because you mentioned something that's quite interesting to say, you've always known that you want to go this direction. Did you have to talk to them, convince them?
Yeah, I mean, definitely there was that, I want to call it tension, but so my mom is more in the accounting field, yes, even my aunts and even my dad more on, yes, the business side of things. And so after high school, you know, I got like a interning job, sort of like I don't want to call it an internship, but I got a job in a bank. You know, my aunt and my mom were kind of in that kind of background. So there was that pressure to, oh, you should continue into, you know, just progress and, you know, study in this field.
Yes.
But I had already applied at university, and 3 months down the line, I got accepted, you know, into university for a biological science degree. And then the discussion had to happen about, you know, do you take this or you continue at the bank? You seem to be doing it. And I had to assert myself and say, look, this the bank thing is not, it's not me. You know, this is what I enjoy, biology, what I understand.
Yeah.
And I'm credit to my parents. They gave me trust to say, look. And I also had an uncle who is, you know, sort of in a similar field.
Yeah.
So that also helped. So my parents then, you know, accepted that decision to say, that's the decision that I would like to go into.
Oh, wow. Okay, let's then take it into, I want to talk about your first career as you started, but the university life, it sounds like it was a very technical course, very difficult, not one that a lot of people would get into. Did you sail through, and how did you find your peers in this particular course as well at university?
Yeah, Tapelo. I mean, like I said, I think it's very important to do something that one enjoys. In my case, biology came naturally to me. In fact, when I speak to my friends back in high school and they know what I'm doing now, they're like, I'm not surprised by what you're doing. You know, so it wasn't as, of course, university and studies, you know, there's always challenges, but was not as challenging as one would, at least for me, as one would think that it would be.
Yeah.
Because that I enjoyed, something that I guess naturally understood.
Yeah.
So I progressed quite well in my undergrad, postgrad. So I wouldn't say for me it was as difficult as, you know, imagined.
Okay, all right. And your first job then, is it something that, you know, you've always wanted to be an academic, so I'm going to follow an academic route? Or did you have a short stint, I suppose, in business, in a lab, you know, that kind of work? If you were to take our listeners through, I suppose, that bit of your first time in a career.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, this kind of field is a bit, you know, it's a bit different. So in my instance, my first experience in a work setting, you know, when I did my undergrad, we had a year where you it's a 4-year degree, and in the third year you go for an internship.
Yeah,
you know, and so you go there, and so I worked at a research institute back in Zimbabwe. That was my first experience of you know, a research environment.
Yeah.
And even a work environment, you may put it that.
Yeah.
And that's when you assert whether this is really for you or you want to, you know, different parts. I think they designed it quite nicely. So in that internship year, I think that cemented, you know, my call it passion or interest in this field. And from then on, when I came to South Africa pursuing postgraduate studies, again, the nature of the field is that I did my postgraduate research. So it's a master's study and a PhD study by research. So I did it at a research institute as well, at a company. So you are studying, but you're in a work setting. You know, and you get to experience the real world application of, you know. So again, you know, you get to get a sense of, is this really what I want?
Yeah.
Or, you know, should I take it to course? But in my case, it obviously cemented my interest.
You are blessed.
In the field.
Sure, you're blessed, and that's why I would say, you know, people like yourselves, I suppose, are the same as people who are creatives who get to work and do what they like. And so the saying maybe is true that if you do what you like, you won't get, you know, that feeling of I'm working, because it's something that you really like and something that you really enjoy and all that. So throughout,
And I must say, you have to like it because it's not a field that pays as well as
one would imagine.
So it's one of those passion careers for sure. Otherwise,
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, before we even go further on this one, I want to get then into genetic improvements of economically important crops, including the use of transcriptomics, right? What is that about? What are you researching there?
Well, Tapelo, you'd be aware that even if you've got a garden, diseases are a problem. Just like, you know, human beings are plagued by diseases.
Yeah.
Similar plants as well are plagued by diseases.
Yeah.
And in the case, to use a very good example, we had COVID in plaguing us not long ago.
Yes.
And we were taking vaccines and stuff like that. We were trying to make the body naturally immune, you know, maybe artificially, if I don't put it like that, but immune to the disease. And similarly, you know, in plants, we try and investigate, you know, how plants respond to infection, you know, and how we can understanding to develop ways to make the plants, you know, resistant or immune, if you like, to diseases. So basically, when you use transcriptomics, there is basically molecular technologies that look into how genes in a plant respond to infection. You know, information to genetically engineer, you know, cultivars or varieties, plant varieties, that are able to handle diseases much better.
Okay. All right. Sounds very complicated and technical, but I think the gist of it I do get, at least with my little bit of exposure to biology back at high school. So I think I do hear what you're saying. Now, you mentioned something there when we started, you know, you had some time that you spent at a research lab as well, you know, and also then South African. I know you did sort of, you worked at the South African Sugarcane Research Institute as well. And a couple of others where you were visiting scientists and all that. What would you say in your career so far has been the highest moment, juxtaposing that with perhaps what would you say is has been your challenging moment in your career so far?
Yeah, Tapel, I think the highest moment, you know, is being able to work with people who are at the top of their field and learning from them. So I think I've always had this approach where if I want to work on something, I look, okay, who's the best person in the world at this? You know, and then I get in touch with them and I say, look, can I come visit you? And, you know, so we've noted that I've had opportunities to travel quite extensively, visit labs and work with Swiss, who are quite at the top of their game, quite good. So I think that's the highlight and the stimulation and the ideas you get from them, you know, that I'm able to use in my own way. That has been, you know, a major highlight. And if you want to talk about challenges, you know, so this kind of work is quite dependent on, you know, funding to do this research. So so you know, go out there and say, look, I've got this idea, this project, we want to work on this. You have to go to private or public organizations and look for money and funding to do this work. You know, you do sometimes people saying no, you might submit 20 proposals and out of the 20, maybe only five get accepted or even one gets accepted, you know. So you have to deal with that disappointment and not having sometimes money to do the work that you want to do.
And I suppose with those challenges then, because I don't know, I find that most people who are researchers, you know, spend some time, they always complain about the same thing. There's no funding or there's limited funding. We often have to go out and look for funding. But it seems like you said, if it's something that you love doing, you will still continue and still do proposals, try and get funding and all that. What motivates you as Mr. Mahlanza? What keeps you going despite the challenges of funding and others that you may not have mentioned as well? Why do you keep doing this?
Tapelo, I suppose, like I mentioned earlier on, that this is a passion job anyway. So I think that would be the starting point. That, you know, you enjoy doing this. I think the beauty of it is you are solving real world problems, right?
Okay.
So we work a lot with farmers. We work with people where, you know, their livelihood is affected by whether they eat a disease or whatever. So I think there's that really good aspect that it's not just, unlike being at a university where it's basically academic and, you know, it's also a place. But in this instance, you know, in our case, we work with a real life, you know, application where people are having a challenge and then we come in and apply the science to come try and come up with solutions. So I think that's very interesting, seeing how science can bring about solutions.
Okay.
You know, is a motivating factor in itself.
Yeah.
I think that. That's a major point towards that.
Yeah, fantastic. And it does sound like if there was any other option, you wouldn't take it. This is where you've always wanted to be, and so you wouldn't consider that. But I'm sure there must be another option. Wasn't there ever a thought of something else in the process, or you've never entertained a second option in terms of a career?
I to be honest, Tapelo, I can't really, you know, obviously, like I mentioned, my aunt and my mom were thinking, yeah, going to banking, and, you know, and I never really thought about that. Maybe a business, even one in this field, where when you know, you advance in your career, one would see how you can merge science with business.
Yeah,
you know. So maybe more on the business side of things, but as a career per se, you know, business or any other, I can't remember, to be honest, having major thoughts about an alternative.
No, you are really blessed, my brother, and that's an amazing one there to have that kind of I suppose trajectory and know exactly what you want to do and you want to stay there as well, which is amazing. Let me just ask this one: do you find that you are comfortable with being called Doc, or you just don't want to go there?
Sorry, come again.
I'm saying when you know how people with PhDs and all that, some would say, no, I'm a Christian. And I'm asking because we've spoken to a lot of them when they come to the show, like, no, don't call me Doc or Professor or whatever, and all that. Do you find that there's a thing about it with you, or there isn't? And we always ask them the same questions as well. Do you find that it's a challenge, or you're quite fine with that?
Look, I've always say in only in professional settings with,
okay.
Or even sometimes even in professional settings like at work,
yeah.
Titles are not flung around because everyone is a PhD.
Really?
So it's a first name basis.
Oh wow!
And you find people tend to insist to want to call you that outside of in non formal settings, and which is unnecessary.
Oh, okay.
I feel, unless you are engaging outside the work where maybe your credentials might be of benefit to
yes.
you, maybe something where you're presenting something and you know those people might be useful. But generally, I don't think it's necessary in informal settings to give you those titles.
Yeah. Okay. that's interesting. And I always get different answers. But you find that a lot of people say, nah, it's okay. Don't call me that. Call me this and all that. But here's what I want to ask then, as a person, maybe a lot of people who might be pursuing in their own careers, wanting to do PhD and all that. Apparently, it's almost like a suicide attempt doing your PhD. Generally. And I know you did it because you love it. This is your space. This is something you enjoy. But is it really a suicide attempt doing a PhD in whatever field?
It's challenging.
Yeah.
I would say it is indeed challenging. There's a lot of sacrifices in terms of the hours and the work you have to put in, especially for people who have to do it whilst working.
Yeah.
So in my case, I was doing it full time.
Mm.
But it's even worse off when if you're working a full time job, then you start part time.
Yeah.
Challenge.
Yeah.
But because for a PhD, you have to come up with something original, something novel. You need to add, some knowledge to the general body of knowledge in your field. So the pressure came up with something novel, and it's an upgrade from the level of thinking from a master's to a PhD.
Yes.
The level of thinking and writing has to be quite apparent that you are thinking and writing at that level, and your rationalization, that level as well. So the critique that comes along with it. So you're having your ideas challenged. And sometimes you might think it's a bit personal.
Yeah.
If you're not careful, when people are saying, look, this is, it's not sound, or they're going into your work and you have to defend it.
Sure.
So from that perspective, from an intellectual perspective, it's challenging from the aspect of the work and the hours that you have to put in it. In my field, where you do experiments, sometimes experiments don't work, or the original idea that you had in your proposal does not work, and you have to completely sometimes come up with a new idea halfway through, and you're wondering, will I make it? Would I call it a suicide challenge? Maybe that's an expression of simply trying to express that it's a difficult thing.
I get it. Well, those of you pursuing your PhDs, you're on the right track. You're not attempting suicide. You might need to just breathe a little bit here and there. But you're definitely on the right path. That's what I'm hearing from Utendekai there. Now, let's get into the topic about money then. And we always ask our shapeshifters again the same question about money. How would you define your relationship with money? Do you think it's a healthy one, it's a toxic one? We are in progress. We are working towards something.
Yeah, Tapelo. I would like to think myself as having a practical relationship with money.
Okay.
I am quite comfortable to when money is not there to the extent that I would like it to be. I'm quite able to adjust where needed, and when there's opportunity that there is, more, I can be more liberal, if I can put it that way. My wife would probably define me as being frugal.
Okay.
to say that I don't have my own challenges, I would like to. I'm still on, you know, trying to improve in certain areas.
Yeah.
That I think, you know, whether it be investing and the areas that I wished I had known quite earlier on.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a journey. Like I think you've indicated. Having to adjust where when needed, and you know, knowing where to put money,
yeah,
or how to use it. It doesn't always come naturally, especially in our setting.
Yes,
we're not taught these things.
Yes,
yes. By yourself.
Sure, and then what would be the one mistake that you think you've made about money, and what would be the one high, I suppose, lesson that you think you would have learned about money?
Yeah. I think I wish I had known about investing quite. The opportunities,
yes.
Especially because time is money.
Yeah,
you know? And you look now, you are in your late 30s, and you thought, yeah. If I had done this 10
yes.
years ago,
yes,
you know, I did not know.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Perhaps maybe mistakes could be some investments I took that did not, you know, bear fruit, or maybe you know, you invested in the stock and you did not come out. At the point where you're supposed to come out, and being emotional sometimes about investing decisions, it's not an emotional thing; it's a practical thing. And that could be a range of mistakes. And of course, maybe on I think getting to understand the power of compounding interest. Mm. And like I said, time is money. One would have wanted to know some of those things earlier.
Mm.
Market, you know, understanding that much earlier, opportunity that one pursued. But now understanding that it has been beneficial businesses.
Ah, fantastic, fantastic. All right. As you draw towards the close, of course, our listeners, +27734703520, of course, is the number that I was giving to you and giving to you again right now. If you do want to engage us, +27734703520. As we conclude, Mr. Maslanza, I want to ask you then, if you were to glance back at your younger years, formative years, what advice would you give to the younger self?
Yeah, I would probably say, assert yourself more.
Mm.
You know, put out there. Create relationships because a part of this world, it's about your social capital.
Yeah,
you know. And being confident in yourself and putting yourself out there, creating networks, building relationships that can transcend time.
Mm.
The people now who are perhaps in business or pursuing opportunities that they met, you know, way back when. No, but also, you know, to not limit God. I think
sure.
I think looking. I've had instances where I put myself as saying, I think if I aim here, God have done, got to exceed that.
Yeah.
So I would say, don't limit God.
Yeah.
In what you're pursuing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. That's lovely. And what would you do differently?
I think I would have probably pursued educational opportunities, perhaps it's in the same in the same field, but the opportunities that I thought were beyond me. Things that I thought I could have pursued, but I thought I cannot do it.
Yeah,
you know, and so I would have probably taken those up. But nonetheless, I think we are where we are
yes.
because of,
Sure, that's beautiful. You've done all these things. You've done your PhD. You are a researcher. You love what you do. You've got a family that, of course, you do all these things for. And what's next in the next 10 years? Where do you see yourselves?
Well, professionally, I suppose, you know, right now, busy, you know, building a research group, but PhD students that I also, you know, growing that group and growing the research that we're doing, and as I mentioned, making it impactful to the real world and solving some of the problems that we have our eyes on, and then I suppose from if you want to call it a personal perspective, has always been hesitant about pursuing business opportunities. We've got ideas, but there's always that thing, that fear.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's a failure
or
what, but there's that fear of, you know, this idea just in your head and pitching, but you also want to make that sacrifice. You give yourself excuses. But one hopes that maybe in the coming years, one can pursue those ideas and maybe start a business.
Sure, that would be beautiful. And we will be there to bring you now on a Wednesday this time around, because on Wednesdays we do talk to entrepreneurs about their businesses, and then on Thursday we do this Shapeshifter thing. So you'll be coming in now as a different hat altogether, talking about your business. It would certainly be great for us to have that chat. But as we draw to a close, young people look up to you. Some you know, some you may not know. Maybe some are in the trenches thinking it's not possible, in deep levels of poverty and all that. What would be your message of support to them, and as they are listening, words of encouragement as well?
Yeah, I would say, you know, do what you enjoy first of all. I think, yes, we should need to sustain ourselves.
Yeah.
Really, you need to chase that money.
Yeah.
But let's have a balance and do what we enjoy, something that is fulfilling. I'd say work hard and trust God. Trust God. Put in your share of the work and trust God and whatever you need and pray. Not always pray, but also put in the work.
Yes, yes.
Sometimes people might end up praying too much and not putting the work. So I would say, yes, do your part, work hard, and trust God.
Yeah.
You do not know what God has in store for you.
Yes.
Don't limit God.
Sure.
Trust that you can exceed your imaginations.
Yeah. Sure. Trust God, you know, He can exceed even your wildest imaginations, I suppose. Let me take this advantage, Doc, and call you Doc. So thank you so much, Doc, for joining us this Thursday and just sharing with us your life, your journey, and what you have been through. We pray and hope that God will continue to bless you, and we wish you nothing but the best. I do hope we can reconnect again in the near future. But thank you so much for joining us this evening. I appreciate it.
Tapelo, thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. And enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Of course, that was our Dr. Utende Kai Mahlanza talking to us about his own life and what he has been going through. Of course, that was the Thursday edition of Business Sense, which is Shapeshifters. I loved that. I loved it. I hope that you've loved it as well. Let's hear from you as well. +27 7347 03520. That is +27 7347 03520. Some of the lessons that you may have taken from that conversation that we just had. Thank you so much to Dr. Mahlanza.
Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.